Thanks, Dan, for leading our call today on the franchisor client presentation of 18-8. So take it away, Dan.
Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. Hope everybody's doing well. Let me kind of talk through the process of why I presented 18-8 to my client. And so I'm going to give you some background about them. My client actually was a referral from an executive recruiter. This individual has quite a bit of experience, as you can tell from the PFA. He's been at Deutsche Bank, been in the banking industry for many years, primarily in operations, and as you can see, made a nice salary. He was at $400,000 in his last job. Problem is he's been looking for a job for over 12 months and was really getting concerned about, can I find a equivalent opportunity in Nashville? And he really emphasized to me that he and his wife had a very, very strong desire to remain in Nashville. So that was a clear career pain. His wife is a stay-at-home mom. She hadn't worked since 2004 and was a teacher, but had no desire to go back into teaching and did occasional part-time jobs, her last one with Pier 1. So in my phone conversation with Scott, he indicated that he had never really thought about doing something on his own. It was really the executive recruiter said, you ought to maybe think about going into business for yourself. So this was a completely foreign concept to him. So I basically started off the process by saying, I didn't have a seminar or a webinar coming up soon. So I sent him a recorded career alternatives to franchising webinar, told him you'd have both your wife and yourself listen to them, and then also send him the blueprint for success and the link to complete the PFA. And he asked the question, should my wife fill this out? And I'm like, by all means, and even more so if she's going to be involved in the business. So sent that to him, and then there's another document, as you all know, that I have my clients complete, and it's called Critical Questions to be Answered, before becoming a business owner. And kind of the way that I position this is, the PFA is a real nice document to complete on an individual basis, but the Critical Questions document, I say, sit at the kitchen table and have both your wife work through this. And so it can be a very nice tool for them to have a conversation. And so I really like that, and that's how I position that. Okay, so prior to the meeting, when I got back the critical questions document, there were two things that really shouted out. One was they indicated they needed a backup plan to provide supplemental income if Scott doesn't find a job. So that was kind of screaming semi-absentee models to me. And then second, the spouse's score for the question, how serious do you want to be in business? Her score was actually higher than Scott's. So I'm like, okay, I probably have quite a bit of buy-in from this spouse, and it really does sound like she's going to be involved in the business. During the consultation, they emphasized needing to stay in Nashville and finding something that they can do together, and they stressed that several times. I shared with them, as I do most of my clients, the spectrum of franchising document. And they looked at it, and they both gravitated to inbound retail and master regional opportunities. So I knew that they were wanting to do something big. As you know, Scott has a Achiever emulator. I actually didn't provide Rosie's, that's his wife's PFA. I did send it to Tracy this morning. There really wasn't a whole lot of substance other than, obviously it was good to get the profile, and her profile ended up being a Belonger Achiever, but really the Belonger Achiever scores were almost identical. And they were both similar in a lot of ways. In going through the PFA, their core competencies were administrative and client management support. They kind of alluded in several occasions about maybe not wanting to do sales, and so that was one of the things that I really needed to vet. They indicated to me as far as attributes, they wanted strong repeat business, they were comfortable managing employees, they wanted something unique, And their goals were to build equity, build a sizable and scalable business, to make a lot of money. They have a backup plan, so multiple streams of income, to remain in Nashville and work together. Okay, so as I'm sorting through this during the consultation, you know, based on their goals and business attributes, I'm thinking, okay, so what has strong potential for growth, is unique, and can be run semi-absentee? And so I'm mentally formulating the businesses that I want to present to them. Clearly, without any question, 18-8 was at the top of my list. I mean, anytime any of us are dealing with a client that could be interested in a semi-absentee strategy, I definitely think you need to be thinking about hair care. But, you know, so I don't forget, I'll tell you the businesses that I presented to you, presented to them, and then kind of how I walked through the 18-8 presentation. And again, I knew that I had to position them for multi-unit and master opportunities as offering the most lucrative options. Okay, so the businesses that I presented to them were 18-8, Pet Supplies Plus, and Made Right. 18-8 and Pet Supplies could be run both on a semi-absentee owner basis, and Made Right was really one of the only few master opportunities that I had. And with Made Right, it was going to give me an opportunity to really vet their interest in sales, because as we know, a master opportunity is very much a sales-oriented business. So that was kind of our opportunity to vet that. But again, I really got the sense that they were looking more for a retail, management, customer service-centric type business. Okay, so why 18-8? Well, I mean, obviously, 18-8, their buyer motive is AE. Scott was an AE. His wife had a lot of A. They're both auditory, and so I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to kind of share and tell them some stories. And they were both optionals, too. So I'm thinking, all right, well, can I show them maybe an industry, a proven industry, but a new way of doing it? Okay, so that was kind of my rationale for presenting 18-8 first. I then do like what I would do with anybody when I'm talking about the hair care industry. Obviously, I don't tell them what the business is. I say, let's have some fun. And I'm going to share with you a business that I think possesses a lot of attributes that you and Rosie, are, you know, both you and your wife are looking for. And so I'm going to tell you what these attributes are, and then I want you to guess. So, you know, we'll have some fun with this. So I told them, and I'll just run through like I do with anybody. I say, this is a $65 billion industry that is proven, has low failure rates, is recession-proof. It doesn't matter, you know, whether it's an up or down economy. People are going to always need this. It's technology resistant. So how it's done isn't going to be impacted by software or the internet. The employees are licensed, so you tend to have less turnover than you would in the food business. It's an all-cash business, so no receivables. Very little inventory and no spoilage. Strong repeat business, so provide a great experience and your customers will come back. Can be run on a semi-absentee owner basis. So it's a manager, executive-level model. Again, trying to appeal to that AE. Very scalable, multi-unit opportunity, okay? Now, all those things you could apply to any Supercuts, Great Clips, you know, the value brands. Here's where I then got into 18-8. Now, again, I didn't say 18-8, but here are the things that I then mentioned, you know, to get them jazzed up about 18-8. Very fragmented space, so no dominant player, very, very much a niche business. It's classy, professional clientele, ground floor opportunity, so be first to market. It's really experiential. It's all about providing a better quality experience. So it's kind of like the Starbucks of this space. It's a mid-level price point, which I then kind of, obviously when I tell them what 18 is, I go into more detail about that. Very handsome item 19. And tell them, listen, a lot of the folks that I work with are corporate executives like you. They're looking for an opportunity like this. Okay. So then I, you know, okay, well, what do y'all think it is? They didn't know. and I tell them. I tell them it's 18-8, and I said, I bet you didn't think about this. Of course, you know, they never do. And they're pretty intrigued. I mean, they said all those things were very attractive to them. I said, you know, a lot of people don't think of this because they think that they need to be performing the function of the business. And I said, they're not looking for stylists. They won't sell the business to stylists. So I'm breaking down some of those initial myths. And then I share a personal story. And that story is actually my own experience. So when I've gotten haircuts in the past, I've gone to salons myself. And I've gone to women's salons. And am very able to articulate to them, when I went to those women's salons, I felt very uncomfortable and out of place. And it's true. I mean, I felt kind of foo-foo-ishy, and I don't know, it doesn't feel right, but I want a better quality haircut. And so I was able to share my own personal experience. And I said, have you all ever kind of experienced that too? And Scott said, yeah. He says, you know, I kind of struggle with where I go because I'm not really into the value. But, you know, I get it, Dan. I totally get what you're saying. So I was getting buy-in from them on that. And by the way, you know, they had mentioned about the value brands. I was already sold out of Great Clips, Supercuts, Sports Clips, and even though we don't work with them, Fantastic Sam's. I know the area developer here. So there was no opportunity to do the value. So I really had to focus on their AE buyer motives and getting them jazzed up about getting into a ground floor opportunity that had a lot of blitz. Okay? That is essentially how I presented it to them. But, you know, something that I want to mention, you know, don't feel like belongers wouldn't be attracted to this business. So I'm going to very quickly run down through the buyer motives of why they would be attractive to 18-8, so that you can position it for anybody, you know, whether an EA, B, or S. Okay, so, I mean, clearly with the E's, the emulators, the item 19, I mean, they make a lot of money per store, incredible margins. I said, you know, you're going to be very, very impressed with their item 19. Obviously, it's higher image, it's prestige, trendy, you know, emulators like that kind of stuff. First to market, you know, wah-wah, it's me, and I'm creating this brand new niche. They'll like the recurring cash flow with the membership, so that's kind of the E stuff. The A's obviously build a large, scalable business. It's an executive-level model. Dominate the market, help build a brand. With belongers, okay, a lot of belongers, I'm making some generalizations here, but a lot of belongers aren't necessarily into the high sales type businesses, okay? Well, you don't need to be, you know, a sales machine for an 18-8. You only need one store in a lot of respects. You know, belongers oftentimes don't want to conquer, you know, build an empire. One store with an 18-8 relative to our value brands, it puts out some pretty good money. So, again, getting into that comfort level of you don't have to operate a lot of stores. Strong family culture, opportunity to provide a great customer service experience. It's in a proven industry with low failure rates. That's demonstrated by the SBA. 18-8's been around since 2002. The management team has 50 years of experience in the hair care industry with Paul Mitchell, Vidal Sassoon, Fantastic Sam. You know, so I'm trying to get them past some of those objections of, you know, they've been around since 2002. They've got a ton of experience in hair care. Hair care as a category is a very strong, resilient industry. You know, we also talk about multiple revenue streams. So to give them comfort that it's not just hair care, it could be waxing, massages, facials, manicures, that kind of stuff. And then lastly, with societals, the stylists get paid significantly more than at the value brands. The stylists covet these jobs. So, you know, in the spirit of, oh, well, you know, I'm concerned about my employees and want to provide them with, you know, employment. Well, you can really provide an opportunity and advancement for people that don't oftentimes think they have good prospects. So there you go. That is my presentation regarding ET8.
Questions, anybody?
Hey, Dan. Yeah. How many units did they buy? Did they buy only one?
I'm sorry, what was that?
How many units did they buy?
My client bought 3 units.
Okay.
And interestingly enough, he did find a job. So, you know, when they had mentioned that they wanted to find something that they could do together, that came to fruition. So Scott ended up getting the job. He is actually in New York. He commutes back and forth on the weekends. So it was essential that he got his wife involved in this, without a doubt.
Dan, did they end up looking at... Oh, go ahead.
How long did 18-8 say it was going to take to open the first unit?
I personally can't tell you what they said. You know, I'd tell anybody when they're looking at retail, don't be shocked if it takes you 9 months or so.
Yeah.
So my clients, they closed in April. They signed their lease in October, so 6 months.
That's pretty
bad. They get an SBA loan, or did they finance it themselves, or
They did the Fran Fund financing.
Okay, and they didn't need an SBA loan?
They did not need an SBA loan. No, I mean, if you look at the PFA, Scott's got $1.9 million net worth. They had quite a bit in IRA and liquidity.
Gotcha. Okay. Did they look at any other concepts, Dan, or did they just stick?
They did. They looked at Pet Supplies Plus and Made Right. The Pet Supplies Plus, they liked, again, because of the retail. I positioned Pet Supplies Plus as being a boutique pet store that is, again, very much based on the experience and tried to, you know, really describe the differentiators between them and the big box stores. And they liked Pet Supplies Plus. The only thing about Pet Supplies Plus is, you know, when they first came into our inventory, they had indicated that they were really interested in developing a small market footprint. And that's how I positioned it to my client. And they were a little bit loosey-goosey on kind of what that meant, and we were having a hard time really getting particulars on what the investment was going to be, and so they were a little bit lukewarm on that, but they liked the business a lot. And Made Right, they liked that business a lot too. Again, they were very interested from the spectrum of franchising. They were very interested in the master opportunity. But as they were looking through that opportunity, they really came to the conclusion, you know what, we need retail. I mean, it was good for us to vet that, but I'm just not a sales guy. I'm not comfortable doing that. So we need to really focus on retail.
And the validation, I take it, went well with 18-8?
It went well. Let me share some things that I think all of you need to know about 18-8. I pre-frame with my clients that the St. Gregory Group will be working with them.
Good.
And, you know, Lance and Justin LaCava, they're great and very impressive, and I haven't had any issues with clients, but I do make a point to mention kind of their role in this process because I don't want them to get bought on 18-8 just because of them and not 18-8. And so I share with them, you know, the owner is, you know, got a wonderful culture from what I understand. And by the way, you know, these were the first clients that I worked with and that bought in Nashville. So I didn't really have any other kind of history working with them. So I had to kind of go on what Justin and Lance were sharing with me. But I'm like, you'll get an opportunity to really kind of get the essence of who they are and their culture. But I would just pre-frame that St. Gregory Group, because some people might think that, you know, that St. Gregory Group is kind of slick, but is that really representative of who 18-8 is? The other thing that I've learned is, you know, they're not so good on the site selection real estate side. kind of, you know, it's a young franchise. My clients heard from folks that he validated with that forget using 18-8 site selection folks. You got to find somebody yourself. Indeed, that's exactly what happened. I connected my client with a local realtor that I know, and it went really well. But just something to keep top of mind. The other thing is the investment is what my client heard is the investment is higher than what is stated in the FDD. And that is clearly coming to fruition now that my client has signed their lease and all that. Now, I don't know, that could be Nashville specific, but I think a lot of folks are hearing more along the lines of upper twos, maybe even 300,000. Okay. So
hey,
I kind of plant that seed early on too.
Hey Dan, this is Sarah in Vegas. Hey, I had a client that looked at 18-8, and my understanding was that if you bought a three-pack, the first unit you were required to use the 18-8 real estate team and process. So is that not the case?
Well, I don't know if that's the case now, but I can tell you with complete certainty that my clients found the space as a result of a referral that I made to them. I mean, you know, when I and I called Justin and asked them, you know, so what's the protocol here? And at that time, like, you know, they can use some. I mean, you know, we'd like them to use our somebody that you feel comfortable with. Have at it. But they may have changed in the past 6 months.
Okay.
Hey,
did it come up at all, Dan, about the whole that, you know, I framed it and they were fine with it, but when they reviewed the FDD, my clients were like, wow, you are nickel and dime. You pay for everything separately. And what I pre-framed for them, or at least attempted to, was that, hey, when it's all said and done, parent and laying it all out, did that come up at all?
Another client that just came back from Discovery Day, and that was probably one of the things that he felt most good about, was he really felt 18-8 was incredibly transparent. So, no, I have not seen those objections myself. And, you know, a lot of franchises that we work with, you know, it looks like they're nickeling and diming. So, you know, so generally speaking, I'll tell folks, you know, just so they don't get like sticker shock when they're looking at the FDD, here are things that you want to be cognizant of just so that they don't like, you know, begin to get like freaked out. But no, personally for 18-8, I didn't have any objections from any of my clients. I mean, the ones that are going to move forward buying and ones that didn't.
Hey,
yeah,
Dan,
great.
It's Mike. Hey, I really like your critical questions, especially toward the end where you actually are getting the buy-in before they even come in.
It's kind of my upfront contract. And that's not my creation, although I added a lot of stuff, but I don't know if that was a Leslie Cuban or somebody, maybe Jerry Moriarty, but it was something that in my early FranNet days that I saw and I really liked. And again, I think it's a wonderful tool for them to sit around the kitchen table. So I have all my clients completed. It's just been a normal part of my process.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I tend to think that our PFA, while good, probably supplies 50% of the information we really need. And I think the rest of the information we need comes from these critical questions up front. And then during the interview, it comes from other questions that just aren't on the PFA that I think give you a good idea of which way to turn. And I always tend to find that I think my customers, when they're forced to think about it, really have a pretty good idea of what a business looks like for them, and they'll tell you a lot if you just listen to them. I think that this document is really, really good, and why I haven't used it before, I'm not sure.
Good. What else? Any
hey,
other
Dan, it's Frank Dunn here. How you doing?
Good.
Really quick question, if I can just be selfish here for a minute. I have a client that is an achiever belonger, who has been clamoring for flexibility throughout her research campaign. And so this Achiever Belonger has been focused on supercuts, and she's just come back from Discovery Day, and she likes it, but now she's trying to reconcile the flexibility for the profitability. And so, you know, again, I hadn't shown 18.8 initially because of the Belonger component, but now I'm just kind of wondering about the wisdom of showing 18.8 based on your, you know, earlier comments. And so I'm just kind of wondering if you might think that that is a good idea, or have you ever done that before, shown another concept in the same industry, you know, trying to reconcile something?
I have. As a matter of fact, a client that bought Supercuts, which essentially closed out my market, but they bought a three-pack of Supercuts, and I presented 18.8 to them as well. And they were more Belonger-focused than Achiever-focused, and it came down simply to the history not being there. They liked 18.8, but they needed that warm and fuzzy, comfortable feeling of I can talk to 1,000 franchisees. So, you know, Belongers are going to be like that. But, again, you know, you look at it on the flip side, and listen, I'm a huge fan of Supercuts and Great Clips and Sports Clips, but you know what? That space is pretty crowded, you know, and so if they've got some Achiever in them, why wouldn't they have interest in an 18.8? And there's a bit more substance than you think, as far as, you know, I mentioned the things of why a Belonger. You know, another thing that I forgot to mention for a Belonger is, you know, during the recession, 18.8 actually continued to grow. You know, and that's just another point of saying, even in a down economy, it was still a pretty stable, you know, growth business. So I don't see why you wouldn't present 18.8 along with the others. You know, quite honestly.
Okay, thanks.
Anyone else? Okay. Well, thank you very much, Dan, for agreeing to leave this call.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.
Appreciate it.
Okay.
And everybody have a great weekend.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I'll take care.
Thanks a bunch.
Bye.